For WKU Public Radio, I'm Kevin Willis. In June of 1862, Civil War soldiers were fighting in what became known as the Peninsula Campaign. Although that fighting may not be as well known by the general public as some other battles in the Civil War, casualties were greater there than in any other Civil War battle fought in that year. Dan Modlin has the next in our series of reports on the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War.
Dr. Glenn LaFantasy of the Institute for Civil War Studies at Western Kentucky University says Union General George McClellan was coming under increasing political pressure at this point in the Civil War, in part because of his failure to capitalize on some opportunities in earlier fighting in the Shenandoah Valley.
McClellan, who had been appointed to command the Army of the Potomac, the Union's major army in the Eastern Theater, as well as being named by Lincoln to be general-in-chief of all the Union forces. Since the fall of 1861, McClellan had been under mounting pressure and huge political pressure in Washington to actually do something and attack the Confederates in his front, which was essentially Confederates in Centerville, Virginia, and Manassas, Virginia. But McClellan was reluctant to move. He was a great organizer. He actually made the Army of the Potomac into what it would become as a significant fighting force in the Union Army. He was a great organizer, but he was also one of those generals who needed everything done in advance before he was willing to move at all. And so the two armies just sat there through the winter of 1861 and 1862. Lincoln got so frustrated with McClellan that, this was later on, but Lincoln said, "The man has the slows." And he was precisely right. McClellan seemed to be unable to commit. Finally, McClellan did come up with an invasion plan for Richmond that turned out to be far more elaborate than it probably should have been. What McClellan proposed to do was to move the army by ship, by transport, down to the mouth of the James River and then move westward up the James to capture Richmond. What's significant is that the conflict between the Monitor and the CSS Virginia, those two ironclads, in March 1862, has a direct impact on McClellan's plans, and the necessity becomes to change those plans because this battle between ironclads has occurred, making Lincoln once again nervous about defending Washington and fearful that the CSS Virginia was going to come up the Chesapeake Bay and into the Potomac itself and blast away at Washington, D.C. So McClellan changes his approach route.
And Dr. Jack Thacker, a military historian from the WKU History Department, says McClellan is then opposed by a Confederate leader who will soon be wounded in battle.
McDowell's forces were siphoned off to fight Jackson in the valley, so McClellan reluctantly moves forward. He's opposed by General Joseph Eggleston Johnston, who is basically a defensive commander. One historian has characterized the two of them as one who was afraid to fight and the other who was afraid the other one was going to fight. So it was a very slow-moving campaign. Johnston detached General John Magruder, who was a master at theatrical, and he created a whole host of Quaker guns, which are basically logs disguised as guns, built elaborate defensive works, which there are no men there, made a lot of noise, and McClellan moves very, very slowly north, thinking that he's, again, outnumbered, and the Confederates are withdrawing slowly. And it, to him, it could very well be a trap.
And in the fighting that follows, the Confederate commander Johnston is wounded.
At a little village crossroads called Fair Oak, he is wounded severely. And the battle sort of peters out. The Confederates attack again, but it's half-hearted. But the most important result of all this is Johnston is replaced by Robert E. Lee.
Dr. LaFantasy says the emergence of Robert E. Lee is important from a military standpoint, obviously, but also from a standpoint of morale in the Confederacy.
It's the making, of course, of what will become the high romance of the Civil War with Lee in command of the army that he names the Army of Northern Virginia, which becomes a legend not only in our time, but a legend in its own time, so far as Lee's capabilities as a Confederate general. One historian, Gary Gallagher, has argued that Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia, in essence, become the Confederate States of America for all intents and purposes. They are the winning army in the Eastern Theater, as opposed to defeats that the Confederates suffer in the Western Theater. And Lee symbolically stands head and shoulders over any other figure, except perhaps for Stonewall Jackson, whose fame also rockets high at this point in the war in the Shenandoah campaign, taking place at the same time as this Peninsula campaign occurs.
And Dr. Thacker says the battle also leads to increased criticism for the Union General McClellan.
The interesting thing about this Battle of Fair Oaks or Seven Pines is that in the whole battle, McClellan, whose army is divided by a river, does almost nothing other than order General Sumter's corps to cross the river and aid Keyes. That's the only thing he does and the only order he gives in the entire day and a half, which is an indication of just how out of touch he was to the field command itself.
Dr. Thacker says some historians believe the Peninsula campaign was a good example of why military leaders need to have a good feel for the battlefield.
I think McClellan did lack this ability, and that is a good general can feel a battle. He can feel the back and forth of a battle. Lee is a master at this, and Jackson, too. They both have this uncanny ability to see exactly where they need to strike. And as a matter of fact, Lee even has some division commanders like A.P. Hill and Hood who are capable of doing that very well. And McClellan couldn't do that. That makes an enormous difference in terms of fighting.
Dr. LaFantasy agrees that the talent of the different commanders became apparent during the Peninsula campaign.
It's an incredible talent that has always amazed me as a Civil War historian, how these individuals, and some of them, as Jack mentions, are commanders in the field like Jackson and Lee, but also subordinates on the Union side, Brigadier General John Buford of the Union Cavalry. These guys had a sense that when they were hit by a force, that they could actually tell the number. They could tell, well, that's about 5,000 hitting us, or that's about 20,000 hitting us. How do they know this? But it's sensibilities, and it also comes from the fact that many of these individuals are West Point, of course, but also that they've been in the Indian Wars out west prior to the Civil War, or they were in the Mexican War, where many of them gained experience. And in fact, we're taught lessons by two very good generals in the Mexican War, Winfield Scott and Zachary Taylor.
This has been the latest in our series of reports on the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War. For WKU Public Radio, this is Dan Modlin.